This is a disclaimer. All stories told here are part of the uncanny and disturbing. If you're not willing to be frightened and disgusted, turn it off. It is hard to close the third eye once it is open. This is the Asian Nightmares Podcast. Alone, on your way home, your mind is suddenly aware that the night is empty like a mouth, and you whisper back, "You don't disturb me, and I don't disturb you." But the things in the night don't listen to the living, the well, the innocent. They have been here long before you, and you are a temporary visitor, an intruder. If they call you, don't reply. If you see them, don't acknowledge. This part of the world is shared with the unknown. So don't look back. Walk quicker. Hide. Asia is old, and so are its nightmares. We hear today a story about Ben who talks of a distant past, a hidden walkway only accessed by rain, where only the unanswered live. Performed by Tan Guo Lian Sutton and written by Christopher Falk, Wade Through the Water Corridor.
I don't like the rain. Haven't for many years. You could almost say that I hate it, which is quite ironic for Singapore. Each time the sky turns dark, which is very often in this country, I have this urge to hide underneath my blankets, turn on all the lights and hope the lightning in the black sky doesn't trip the fuse box. I've done this for quite some years. I don't know if I've gotten better by now. You think so? Where to? I really didn't want to remember this story. It's been too long, but I did promise you, so, that I talk about it, to you. The topic felt too tough. Thank you, babe, for not asking questions about the sea, about not wanting to swim, making all our holidays only to inland destinations. All the strange behaviors that I'm sure annoy the hell out of you. But I've never told anyone this. Not even Ma in the years after. Not even on her deathbed. It's too hard to explain what I saw, what I felt. I didn't think anyone would believe me. Not even you, babe. Don't make that face. It's not like I don't trust you. I do. It's just, I had buried this memory at the back of my brain for so long, it feels like a clogged drain. I know I've always told you that I was an only child, but that was only after I was 7. That's what, primary 3, 4? I was really young then. I had an older brother, Brandon. He was 3 years older than me. Here's a picture. I still have a picture of him on my phone. Let me find it. There. That's him. Skinny, loud, mushroom cut hair. Brave. He was brave. Braver than me. Energetic too. Climbed to the top of the playground, sat downstairs near our house and dangled upside down on the monkey bars while I stood below and begged him to come down because I was so scared he'd fall down and and break his skull, and then how was I going to go home and tell Ma about it? And he laughed this big barking laugh and say, "Don't be stupid, Ben. Don't be stupid. It's so stupid what happened. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, we used to be poor. I mean, sitting here in this HDB flat, this is big. When we moved in after we got married, I was shocked by how big it is. People say it is small now, but they don't know anything. This is so far from where and how I used to live. In Red Hill. The one-room flats, you know those? It used to look like those Kowloon, you know, Hong Kong buildings. Where it's like many flats on one floor and one common corridor. Yeah, I lived there. And Ma ran away with us from that bastard of a man. That's all we could afford. One room, kitchen, toilet, bedroom, living room, dining room, all rolled into one. The only privacy you have is the toilet. That's it. But it was home. No more shouting. No more beating. Home. Until... we lived on the 10th floor of this 12-story building, and Brandon and I first found the place so dark and gloomy. When we arrived to our new house, it was already night. 10 p.m. about. You take for granted all the familiar things, then suddenly they're not familiar anymore. You know what I mean? That house? That corridor? I can still see it. That place, after all these years, well, the gates outside were all the same, just in different degrees of rust. But they had one thing in common, which was all the top halves of the gates were still in perfectly painted condition. It was off. There was this smell, a smell like bleach. A nose-clogging odor, like they were trying to get rid of mold and failing miserably. Because most of the walls around had these trails of mold or moss crawling around the walls like creepers, it was so badly maintained. There was this line. This line that split the corridor walls across horizontally. Like a child took a pencil and drew across. It would be the first thing you saw once you get off the lift. The top was white. And the bottom, brown. But the brown looked more like a dark black mud. A depressing colour. At the end of the corridor was this rectangular view of the sky, the only natural thing we could see. I'm telling you this because you need to know nothing was right about that place. The place felt wrong. But it was 10 at night, and we just arrived, and you would think our tiredness would make us ignore these stupid walls, but they sticked up. Our house was just two doors away from the lift. I wouldn't say that we were right smack in the middle of the corridor, but close enough. When we got to our place that night, the three of us were so exhausted, we just threw whatever belongings we had on the damp floor and collapsed on the bed. After Ma swept whatever dust she could find on the plastic cover of the mattress. I woke up that night, I don't know, 3, 4 a.m. It was the middle of the night. Brandon had taken up most of the space on the mattress nearest to the wall. Ma was closer to the edge on the other side of me, her back to me. I felt a drop of water on my face. When I opened my eyes, as the black ceiling swam into view, I saw these hovering droplets of water just slowly collecting on the ceiling, shiny from the light outside. You know that kind? When the MRT leaks water, the water droplets just collect there dangerously before it falls due to some kind of shake or movement. At 7 years old, I only noticed it as some kind of annoyance. Then I turned around and faced Mars back to drift off. Now, this may seem really ordinary to you, but I think that was really the first instance when I made contact with that thing. The next morning when I woke up, I looked up and there was nothing on the ceiling. Not even a damp spot. The ceiling looked smooth and crack-free. Wait. Okay. I'm not done. Please, just listen. Listen. Please. It was just a little stuff at first. Water on the ceiling of the toilet, even though no one had showered yet. Water collecting on the windowsill grooves, even though it hadn't rained. Droplets of water on the kitchen countertop, like trails of water droplets individually placed. Like footsteps of some unseen thing. Like suddenly you walk along the floor and you're stepping into a damp patch when no one spilled anything. When the spot was dry before. This all happened in our house. Repeatedly. Then, outside in the corridor, I realized no one had placed anything outside. Not shoes, not mats, not bicycles, not even a lousy potted plant. It felt like we were the only ones staying there on that floor. It was weird and odd, but I was trying really hard to like the place. Brandon and Ma never said anything, so I thought it was just because the place was unfamiliar to me. So I came up with my own excuses. Like it was because of some obscure estate rules, keep the corridor neat. But on one Saturday afternoon, Brandon and I wanted to play block catching for the first time there. And as I ran down the stairs from our 10th story, I saw the 9th floor was full of clutter, like cardboard boxes, clothes, racks, potted plants. I stopped there and Brandon hits me hard on the shoulder, yelling that I was it. But my sudden stop there made him ask, "What's wrong?" And I asked him, "Why can't we put anything outside in our corridor?" He said, "Don't know. You have something to put outside? You're not scared people will steal?" Which was just a stupid reason, because we had nothing worth being stolen. Even our clothes were old. I think my best clothes were my school uniform. And Brandon runs back upstairs again. When I followed him back up to the 10th floor, he wasn't there. And even at 3 in the afternoon, I don't know how to describe how creepy that corridor was. I didn't want to walk through it by myself. "Ben!" Brandon was behind me on the stairwell going up to the 11th floor. I followed him up and the 11th floor was just as cluttered. But something else caught my attention. In the blank spots of the corridor, the walls were white, top to bottom. Or off-white. I couldn't tell. When was the last time the town council had painted the corridors? Brandon had stopped as well, similarly stunned. This corridor was just as cluttered, a stark difference from our own floor. For some reason, I started to feel anxious. I held onto Brandon's shirt and pointed at the blank spot along the 11th floor corridor. He noticed it too, and the corridor was only painted in one color. So, what would two boys do in this situation? Yeah, you guessed right. Go investigate. The light of the afternoon was still bright, and what could happen to us in the light? Back at our two-tone corridor, Brandon was looking closely at the brown paint on the bottom half of the wall. To me, it looked like normal brown paint, and I was satisfied with thinking maybe they did so for every other floor to make it a bit special. But Brandon started picking at the wall with his finger to try and scrape it away. When his cut fingernails couldn't find any edges to do so, he took off for the floor below, despite me shouting at him. But he was back in less than 2 minutes with a broken stick in hand. He took the sharp end of the stick and started chipping away at the brown paint. No hesitation whatsoever, just hitting the wall with the stick. At first, there was just the stain of the branch on the brown surface, but then the paint did something weird. It cracked. Like, not like glass, but like porcelain or clayware. The kind of dryness you see on the ground during droughts on TV. Yeah, like that. On the wall. And then I got a bit scared because if we got caught for vandalizing, we might get kicked out. So I was pulling Brandon away from the wall, but he refused to. He picked at the wall a bit more and brown paint fell away. What was beneath should have been off-white wall, right? It wasn't. The wall beneath was a dark, rusty red, wet and mossy, like a wound. I started to really pull Brandon away from the wall then. He relented at last and threw the stick into the stairwell. I ran back home and I didn't want to leave the house at all after that. When Ma was away at work, it was just Brandon and me. Despite him wanting to play outside, I refused to play along the corridor after that. It felt more alive than what a building or a space should be, even though there was nothing along it. There was just this aura about it, like it was breathing each time the breeze moved through. Like, after that incident with the wall, those small things I told you before, they became more prominent. A cup of water that I've drunk empty and placed on the table after I've gone to the toilet or turned my back for just a while would suddenly be half full once again. Of course, I refused to drink any of that water. I would bring it to the sink and dump it. This would happen for any cup left around the house, and I got paranoid about it. Yes, that's why I would always turn my cup over when I'm done. Brandon never noticed it happening, and he would always say thank you to me out of the blue, as if I were the one refilling the cup for him. So I would do so, formally. I would snatch the cup out of his hand just as he was about to drink the mysterious water, dump it out while making some excuse like, oh, there's some dirt in it, let me fill it up again. I never used the same rules for the water in the jugs in the fridge. Out of sight, out of mind, I guess. But I did make sure to fill them to the brim again each time I poured myself a glass. Even the thermos flasks. I could never be too sure if the water was replaced. I'd drink a bit, pour out the rest, and fill it with proper boiled water. Then the afternoon when Brandon disappeared. Or maybe not disappeared. I know where he is. It still is. Until now. I know it. It doesn't make sense. I need a minute. It sounds crazy. I know, babe. Even just saying it aloud. This next part, just listen, okay? That damn afternoon, the sky went dark with some storm clouds, and fast, like it does in Singapore. One moment, hard sunshine, the next. Ma wasn't back from work. Both of us had just returned from school, and the smell of rain made us feel lazy and lethargic, so I decided to take a nap. I could finish my homework at night. But when I woke up in darkness, I thought I had slept through dinner. I turned around in bed, and there was Brandon sitting upright on the bed, his back towards me, his head looking at the ground. "What's wrong?" I asked. He didn't move. But then I heard the strangest thing. Besides all the rain pelting the window outside, I heard sloshing. Like water in a bottle just moving back and forth. I looked around him for an answer, my eyes in a haze. But all I could see was the kitchen counter opposite us. I looked at the floor and then I froze. The room was flooded, like there was a good 30 centimeters of water in the house. A droplet of water splashed on my cheek, so I looked up and there was water there too. Not like condensation, there was a layer of water, like a film of water, a shallow pond floating just near the surface of the ceiling. And I could see my reflection and the top of Brandon's head in the shadows, but the reflection, it was not me. It was someone else. It didn't look like me. I could see water in the water. There was this water flowing out of the not me, out of the reflection's eyes and nose and mouth, like it was adding to the layer of water there on the ceiling. I felt like I was in a dream, but I was not. Then there was a sudden movement from Brandon. He stood up and slowly staggered to the door, but not so much as he was walking. It didn't look right. You need to understand. Nothing looked right. As he moved closer to the door, his head lolled about like his neck couldn't hold him up. And I was frozen there on the bed. I couldn't even call out to him. Like the words were dry in my throat. And in the water, not the one on the ceiling, the one on the floor, I could see these shades, shadows? No, currents. They had formed around his ankles, pushing him, wading him through the water. Hands, claws, I don't know. They were moving Brandon to the front door, one foot after the other. And I was scared, so scared. I could feel my underwear getting warm with piss. I didn't understand what was going on. I was 7. You think my imagination now would help me understand the things I was seeing, but even now, something was taking Brandon away from me, and I don't know what pushed me to do it. Courage. Maybe just plain old fear. But I slid my body into the ice-cold water and tried to catch up to Brandon, who was already at the now open front door. The water outside the flat was even stranger. It was nearing the height of my chin, from the looks of it, but it was blocked from flowing into the house. Isn't that crazy? It was like a cross-section of water you see in an aquarium. It was murky, dirty, like canal water. And Brandon simply stepped into it, merging into that body of water, swallowed, and then violently pulled to the left like he had entered a rapid. I hurried and waded as fast as I could to the door. I refused to touch the dangerous water outside, so I shimmied myself up the sides of the door with both my hands and feet. You know the way you do it in order to reach the top of the door frame? I peered out into the corridor, just to see Brandon's hand reaching up and grip the metal bar at the end of the corridor. He pulled himself out of the water and pushed himself up the edge of the wall, and he sat on the ledge, his legs out on the other side into the open air. It should have been open air, but he kicked his legs up like he was at the edge of a swimming pool, and water actually popped up into the air, and I called out to him. I must have, because he turned around to look at me, and he didn't look right either. His eyes were flowing with water. Not tears, because it was... And I remember my throat being so dry. "Come swim," he said to me. "There's nothing there," I replied. And he smiled at me. And the water... God, he smiled at me and said, "Don't be stupid, Ben." And went over. I became so numb. I lost all the strength in my hands and legs at that moment and stumbled backwards onto the floor, but there was no splash. The floor was dry. And when I got up, all the water was gone in the corridor. I stood up as fast as I could and limped out, just to find him, just to get to him as fast as I could. And I got to the end of that corridor and I gripped the railing to look over, just to see. I stopped there. I think, for a moment, just imagining what I would see. What I didn't want to see. But before I could make my decision, I felt wet fingers touch mine. Cold and slimy, and I screamed for them to let go. "I don't want to see! I didn't want to see! Let go!" And they did, and I fell back from the edge, on the floor, looking up. I saw a head of hair. Brandon's wet hair. By this point, I could feel myself becoming faint. I was breathing so hard. The last thing I... was Brandon's eyes peeking over the metal railings, and his voice as he was gargling, "Come swim, Ben." And I blacked out. When I came to, I was in the bright lights of the hospital. In the chair next to me, Ma was asleep. I didn't call out to her, but she still woke up as if sensing me. She asked me to explain what happened, why I was lying in the middle of the corridor, why the door was left open, and where the hell was my brother, And I didn't know how to explain anything. My brain couldn't process it. So all I told her was, Brandon went swimming. Which made even less sense for her. The months following that was not a massive search for Brandon. There was a little blurb in the paper, but other than that, no one came forth with any news. How could they? Ma waited and waited, and the police came up with nothing. Big fat nothing. And like everyone else, they forgot about Brandon. And us. I, on the other hand, took to wetting my bed frequently. Could barely sleep most of the time unless Ma was around. I didn't speak for weeks after that. And the night terrors that followed didn't make it any better. Just me waking up, screaming my head off about not wanting to see and to let go of me. Which made her think that Brandon got kidnapped. If it could be called that. Ma tried asking about the swimming and where, but how could I tell her? I was so petrified and numb all the time. I refused to stay there. If school ended early, I wouldn't return home until Ma came to fetch me. Even she must have felt anxious about me possibly disappearing in that estate. I begged her when I finally found my voice, so Ma found a better job and got us out of that estate, that HDB block. Anywhere but that place. That's the long and short of it. It's crazy, I know. I wanted you to... I love you, babe. You do know that, right? I love you so much. I want you to understand. You have to understand what's coming next, okay? I did not leave that cup of water out for you. And I have never done that. It has never been me. Yeah, I know. It sounds crazy. This whole thing sounds absolutely insane. But I will do whatever it takes to make sure you are not taken, okay? Okay, babe? Look at me. You have to listen. Please. Stop drinking that water.